A German spy drops from a Black Fokker Wulf reconnaissance plane over Cambridgeshire. His silk parachute opens with a rustle, and for 12 minutes he floats silently down. The stars are out, but the land beneath his feet, swaddled in wartime blackout, is utterly dark. His nose bleeds copiously. The spy is well equipped. He wears British issue army landing boots and helmet. In his pocket is a wallet taken from a British soldier killed at Dieppe 4 months earlier. Inside are two identity cards, which are fake, and a letter from his girlfriend Betty, which is genuine. His pack contains matches impregnated with quinine for secret writing, a wireless receiver, a military map, £990 in used notes of various denominations, a Colt revolver, an entrenching tool, and some plain glass spectacles for disguise. Four of his teeth are made from new gold, paid for by Hitler's Third Reich. Beneath his flying overalls he wears a civilian suit that was once of fashionable cut, but is now somewhat worn. In the turn-up of the right trouser leg has been sewn a small cellophane package containing a single suicide pill of potassium cyanide. His name is Edward Arnold Chapman. The British police also know him as Edward Edwards, Edward Simpson, and Arnold Thompson. His German spy masters have given him the codename of Fritz, or affectionately, Fritchen, Little Fritz. The British secret services, as yet, have no name for him. That evening, the chief constable of Cambridgeshire, after an urgent call from a gentleman in Whitehall, has instructed all his officers to be on the lookout for an individual referred to only as Agent X. Eddie Chapman lands in a freshly ploughed field at 2:25 a.m. and immediately falls face first into the sodden soil. Dazed, he releases his parachute, then climbs out of his blood-spattered flying suit and buries the bundle. He shoves the revolver into a pocket and digs into the pack for a map and a flashlight. The map has gone. He must have dropped it in the dark. On hands and knees, he searches. He curses and sits on the cold earth in the deep darkness and wonders where he is, who he is, and whose side he is on. Spring came early to the island of Jersey in 1939. The sun that poured through the dining room window of the Hôtel de la Plage formed a dazzling halo around the man sitting opposite Betty Farmer, with his back to the sea, laughing as he tucked into the 6-shilling Sunday roast special with all the trimmings. Betty, 18, a farm girl newly escaped from the Shropshire countryside, knew this man was quite unlike any she had met before. Beyond that, her knowledge of Eddie Chapman was somewhat limited. She knew that he was 24 years old, tall and handsome, with a thin moustache, just like Errol Flynn in The Charge of the Light Brigade, and deep hazel eyes. His voice was strong but high-pitched with a hint of a northern accent. He was bubbly, full of laughter and mischief. She knew he must be rich because he was in the film business and drove a Bentley. He wore expensive suits, a gold ring, and a cashmere overcoat with mink collar. Today, he wore a natty yellow spotted tie and a sleeveless pullover. They had met at a club in Kensington Church Street, and although at first she had declined his invitation to dance, she soon relented. Eddie had become her first lover, but then he vanished, saying he had urgent business in Scotland. "I shall go," he told her, "but I shall always come back." Good as his word, Eddie had suddenly reappeared at the door of her lodgings, grinning and breathless. "How would you like to go to Jersey, then possibly to the south of France?" he asked. Betty had rushed off to pack. It was a surprise to discover they would be travelling with company. In the front seat of the waiting Bentley sat two men, the driver a huge, ugly brute with a crumpled face, the other small, thin, and dark. The pair did not seem ideal companions for a romantic holiday. The driver gunned the engine and they set off at thrilling speed through the London streets, screeching into the Croydon Airport, parking behind the hangar, just in time to catch the Jersey Airways plane. That evening, they had checked into the Seafront Hotel. Eddie told the receptionist they were in Jersey to make a film. They had signed the register as Mr. and Mrs. Farmer of Torquay. After dinner, they moved on to West Park Pavilion, a nightclub on the pier, where they danced, played roulette, and drank some more. For Betty, it had been a day of unprecedented glamour and decadence. War was coming. Everyone said so. But the dining room of the Hotel de la Plage was a place of pure peace that sunny Sunday. Beyond the golden beach, the waves flickered among a scatter of tiny islands as Eddie and Betty ate trifle off plates with smart blue crests. Eddie was halfway through telling another funny story when he froze. A group of men in overcoats and brown hats had entered the restaurant, and one was now in urgent conversation with the head waiter. Before Betty could speak, Eddie stood up, bent down to kiss her once, and then jumped through the window, which was closed. There was a storm of broken glass, tumbling crockery, screaming women, and shouting waiters. Betty Farmer caught a last glimpse of Eddie Chapman sprinting off down the beach with two overcoated men in pursuit.